Okay, so first I want to mention that the result I'm going to talk about is obtained in a joint work with Miklós Maroti. Okay, and so we heard what the Valeriec conjecture is. So with Miklós we started studying this conjecture. So the conjecture just states, I just repeated, that for structures of finite signature, the existence of GUM operations, GUM polymorphisms, imply the existence of an edge polymorphism. Okay, so maybe in his talk, Ralph used cube operations, but so this is the same conjecture. So I don't want to define edge operation. I don't want to talk about this conjecture more. And so just some facts. So it suffices to prove the conjecture for binary structures. So this is a fact. And many binary relations. But it's interesting if we have only one binary relation. So the case of the case of digraphs is also interesting. And the conjecture is open for this case as well. So so we couldn't handle this case, the case of digraphs with Miklós. So what we could do, we just looked at the case of reflexive digraphs and we proved the conjecture in that case. So for reflexive digraphs, we got that if the structure, if the digraph admits GUM operation, then it admits a near unanimity operation. And when we have a near unanimity operation, of course, we have an edge operation. So that is just result, which is a special case of the conjecture. And so when we got this theorem, we just got some nice characterizations of the reflexive digraphs that admit a near unity operation. And in fact, we got some nice properties of those digraphs. And by using those properties, we could prove another theorem. Namely, that if a reflexive digraph admits a near unanimity operation, then it admits totally symmetric idempotent operations of all arities. And this is the result whose proof I would like to talk about in this talk. Okay, I just mentioned that this result was obtained for POSETs by myself and Benal Rose. And for reflexive symmetric digraph by Feder and Hell. And I also want to mention that those guys who are in CSP, that this theorem is equivalent the theorem that I just formulated here at the bottom. So if you look at the retraction problems for reflexive digraph, then bounded strict width implies bounded width one. Okay. So this is just another formulation of the same theorem, but of course I use the first formulation and I would like to talk about the proof of that. So in fact, I will give a sketch of the proof of the theorem. All right, so everybody knows the definition of a near unity function, of course. And the definition of a cyclic operation is just this. And so I would like to define the total symmetric operation. So an NR operation F is totally symmetric is for any two N tuples whose sets of coordinates are equal, the function values, the F values are equal. Okay, so this is given by this implication, this definition. So and so some more definitions. Of course, a homomorphism between two digraphs is an edge-preserving map, and a polymorphism is just a homomorphism from the n power of a digraph to the digraph, and when n equals 1, then we talk about endomorphisms. And so the interesting thing, or the crucial thing, that if we have the set of homomorphisms from one digraph to another, then on this set we can define a relation, an edge relation, so an arrow relation, and this is how it defines. So we just take two.
Uh,
GFB. Oh, yeah, GFB, yeah. So F, okay, so then I tell you the definition. So we have two functions, F and G, which are homomorphisms from H to G. And I will say that F arrows G if and only if whenever A arrows B in H, then F of A arrows G of B in G. Okay, thanks. And I need the definition of a special endomorphism. So an endomorphism R of G is a one-point element rotation if R fixes all but one element of G on one hand. And we have this additional property that the identity arrows R or R arrows the identity. And by this one-point element rotation, we can define the notion of dismantlability. So I say a digraph G is dismantlable if there is a sequence of G sub I of digraphs such that the first member of this sequence is itself G, and the last member is a singleton in G, and for each I, G sub I is the image of G sub I minus 1 under some one-point element or rotation of G sub I minus 1. So somehow, you know, starting from G, we can dismantle to this G to a singleton by using one-point element rotations. So this is the definition. And so the first step of the proof that I would like to talk about is was just this theorem. So for connected cyclic reflexive digraphs, we could prove that Miriamity implies dismantlability. And a reflexive digraph, of course, is a cyclic if it doesn't have a directed cycle other than the trivial ones, you know, these one-element cycles. Of course, the digraph is reflexive, so it has these one-element cycles. But no other directed cycle, then we call it the cyclic. So in this case, for these reflexive digraphs, Miriamity implies dismantlability. And for connected symmetric reflexive digraphs, we have the same result. So if you know, the digraph admits a Miriamity operation, then it admits then it has the dismantlability property. So it's a dismantlable. Okay, and there is one problem now for general reflexive digraphs that this implication doesn't hold in general. So so we couldn't. Okay, so we had to do some. We had to use some other notion to get around this. And so there is a nice property this which is implied by the dismantlability, and this is the fixed click property. So the digraph has a fixed click property if every endomorphism preserves some click of the digraph. Okay. So and the digraph has a fixed point property if every endomorphism has a fixed vertex. And we have two results. So the first was obtained the Duffelson derival. They proved for a cyclic reflexive digraph that dismantlability implies the fixed point property. And the other result was proved by Bendel, and he showed that for symmetric reflexive digraphs, dismantlability implies the fixed click property. Of course, in this case, we cannot expect the fixed point property, because if we take a complete graph, it's symmetric, and then on a complete graph, every unary operation is a homomorphism, is an endomorphism. So, of course, there is some which doesn't have a fixed click, so it doesn't preserve a click. All right. So, by putting together the previous two theorems with these two, we get these implications for a connected cyclic reflexive digraph. Miriamity implies the fixed point property, and the other one is that for a connected symmetric reflexive digraph, Miriamity implies the fixed click property. And it turned out that the second color can be generalized to all reflexive digraphs. So this is the third color, And the proof of this corollary is based on the proof of those two corollaries. So I would like to talk about the proof. Okay, so we start with the reflexive diagram G, which is connected and admits an NU operation, and we take an endomorphism. And we would like to show that this endomorphism has a fixed clique. So what I do, I just take theta. Theta is just an equivalence, a special equivalence, the strong connectivity equivalence. The blocks of theta are just the strongly connected components of G. And it turns out that theta is a congruence corresponding to the congruence of the algebra corresponding to G. And then F, which preserves the relation of G, induces a map on the blocks of theta. So this map is denoted by F sub theta. And the quotient structure, if I model out G by this theta, then I will get the digraph, and it turns out that this F sub theta is an endomorphism of this quotient digraph. Right? And then, of course, because G was connected, G mod theta is connected, and G mod theta is a cyclic because I just took the strong connectivity equivalence. So, and because G admits an NU operation, G mod theta also admits an NU operation. So by the first corollary, F sub theta fixes an element of G mod theta. And I call this element B, so it is a strongly connected component of the graph. So because F sub theta fixes this B, then we have that F preserves B. So F preserves a strong component. Remember, we would like to prove that F preserves a clique, right? So we need one more definition to the proof, the symmetric skeleton of a digraph. So how do I get the symmetric skeleton of a digraph? I just leave out those edges which are not back and forth. So here you have the digraph. And by leaving out those, deleting those edges which are not back and forth, we get its symmetric skeleton. And there is a plane which we could prove for reflexive digraphs that admit a near unity operation, namely that those digraphs, as for those digraphs, if they are strongly connected, then the symmetric skeleton is connected. So you cannot have this picture for those digraphs, and I want to use that. So let's just finish the proof. So of course, this B is a strongly connected component because G admits an NU operation. It also admits an NU operation. And because its symmetric skeleton, I just mentioned, is connected, we have that the restriction of this F to B preserves this symmetric skeleton. So this is, it's easy to see that, because the relation of the symmetric skeleton is just the intersection of the original relation and its inverse, so it is preserved by F, because F preserves the original relation. So it preserves by its inverse. So, okay, so the symmetric skeleton is preserved by F restricted to B, so we can apply the second corollary. We have a symmetric graph, it's connected, and it admits an NU operation, so it has a fixed clique, and this means that this fixed clique is a clique of the original graph G, and F preserves this clique. So we finished the proof of this corollary. And by using this corollary, we could prove an intermediate result, namely the following. For reflexive digraph, the near unity property implies the existence of cyclic idempotent operations of all arities. So remember, we'd like to show that if a reflexive digraph admits a near unity operation, then it admits total symmetric idempotent operations of all arities. But so this is a weaker result, but we needed this weaker result just to prove the final theorem. Okay, and I would like to talk about the proof of that. So I just start with a reflexive digraph H. I assume that it is connected, it is Laplace generative, and I assume that it admits an NU operation. And I would like to show that it admits cyclic idempotent operations of all arities. So I just do the binary case because the other cases are very similar. So our goal now is just to construct a binary cyclic idempotent polymorphism of H. So this is just a commutative idempotent polymorphism we have to construct. And I would like to apply the corollary that I just proved. So I define a digraph for that reason. Its vertex set is G. It is just a set of binary idempotent polymorphisms on H. And the arrow relation is just the usual that I already defined. Okay. Which, okay. And it turns out that G is a connected reflexive digraph that admits a near unity operation. So then it has, by the corollary, it has the fixed click property. Okay. So here, the condition that G is reflexive and admits a near unity operation is trivial. The only non-trivial condition here that G is connected. In general, G won't be connected. We have to assume that H admits an NU operation, or we had to assume that when we proved to prove this result that G is connected. So that's a non-trivial result. At least it was non-trivial for us, Miklós. But we have this fact. And then, of course, if I take an endomorphism on G, then it will have a fixed click. And now I define an endomorphism. So I just take a mapping G. Remember, G had all binary idempotent polymorphisms of H. So I just take a map, a polymorphism in G, and I just switch its coordinates. That's the image of the function. So the image of f of x sub 1, x sub 2 is just f of x sub 2, x sub 1. And this is, of course, an endomorphism of G. And by the corollary, this alpha, this map, has a fixed click, which I call C. Okay, so I have this fixed click. And now my F here, okay, here, this F is just a fixed map in C. So I fix the map, I call it F in C. Definitely, this alpha images in C because alpha preserves C. So F of X sub 2, X sub 1 is in C. And we know that this C is a clique, so for that reason, because of that, f of x sub 1, x sub 2, and f of x sub 2, x sub 1 can be connected by back and forth arrows. All right? And that's crucial, because if I have this condition, I can define a binary idempotent commutative operation, and this is what I want to do. How can I define? I call this operation, which I want to define, G. And this is just a binary operation on H. And I define G on the two element sets of the form that contain the two tuples, x sub 1, x sub 2, and x sub 2, x sub 1. So I just take some fixed order of these elements, just pick one order, because, you know, this just fixed. And on these two element sets, I define G to be F. You can see that these two element sets partition somehow H square, and F is a constant map on each of these two element subsets of H squared. And definitely, this function that I defined will be commutative. And of course, it's idempotent because F is idempotent. So sometimes here I have x, 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 then I define G to be fxx, which is just x. So it's idempotent. So the only non-trivial thing is that this G is a polymorphism. And this is because of this condition that I just put up. So you can see that because we have these back and forth arrows between f of x sub 1, x sub 2, and f of x sub 2, x sub 1, G will be a polymorphism. So that's just, and that's it. So this is the end of the proof. So we have if we have an idiomatic operation admitted by the sac, the reflexive diagram, then we have cyclic operations admitted by it, okay, for all arithmetic. And from this and from some other thing, we can finish the proof of the theorem. But before I tell you how this was done, I need to define some other notions. So I need the notion of G abstraction. So G is just a digraph. So first I define the G curve digraph. So a G curve digraph is just a pair, HF, where H is a digraph, and F is a partial map from H to G. And the elements in the domain of F are called the colored elements, of course. And a G colored digraph, HF, is called extendable if F extends to a fully defined homomorphism from H to G. Okay? So we have extendable and non-extendable G colored digraphs. And I have to define the homomorphisms between those G colored digraphs. So let's take HF and H prime F prime. So these are G colored digraphs. And I say that G is a homomorphism from HF to H prime F prime if G is a homomorphism from H to G prime, so it's a homomorphism between the base digraph, and G preserves the coloring, so it sends non-colored elements to non-colored elements and colored elements to colored elements of the same color, which is expressed by this equality right here. So there is a homomorphism between these these objects, the G colored digraphs. And one more definition that I need is the containment for them. A G-colored digraph contains another if its vertex set, edge set, and partial coloring contains the vertex set, edge set, and partial coloring of the other one. Okay, so this is the containment. And now I can define the notion of G-abstraction. So a G-colored digraph HF is called the G-abstraction if, on one hand, HF is non-extendable, so F cannot be extended to the whole H here as a morphism or homomorphism, but for any H prime F prime, which is properly contained in HF, the so-obtained colored digraph is extendable. So H prime F prime is extendable if it is properly contained in HF. Right. So these G abstractions are just the minimal non-extendable G colored digraphs. And so the nice thing about them is that there is a characterization of digraphs that admit an idiomatic operation by using G abstractions. So I want to use this. So here is the theorem. So it states that G admits an idiomatic operation if and only if the numbers of colored elements of G abstractions have a finite upper bound. Okay. And it's even nicer that there is a characterization of those digraphs that admit totally symmetric idempotent operations of all arithmetic by using G abstractions. And so this characterization is right here. So it asserts that G admits totally symmetric idempotent operations of all arithmetic if and only if every G abstraction is a homomorphic image of a tree abstraction. This is some kind of tree duality, as it's called in CFP. A tree abstraction is just an abstraction whose base digraph is an oriented tree. Okay, so we had these two theorems. And what we did with Miklós, we just took a G abstraction and we used the theorem that I just proved that this G that admits an idiomatic operation admits cyclic idempotent operations of all arithmetic. So we used this fact and we used the second condition in the first theorem. We put these two together and we constructed a new G abstraction such that this new G abstraction is homomorphic to the old G abstraction. And it turns out, so we could define some measure. a measure, and by this measure, this new abstraction got closer to a tree than the original abstraction, and we just repeated this procedure, and at the end, we got a tree. So we just constructed newer and newer geoabstractions such that the original one was its homomorphic image. And at the end, we got a tree, and then, of course, if we could do this, then we have condition two in the second theorem, so we got the proof of this theorem. But so to do this part is not easy, and I don't have time to talk about the details, so I finished my proof, and finally, on the final side, I just put down the theorem that we proved. So I just repeat this theorem that I was talking about. Okay. So thank you.